This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 12, 2016. It's about 2 o'clock. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with G.E. Mattoon Lamp Plant to Close in August. General Electric Lighting announced on Thursday that it intends to close the Mattoon Lamp Plant by the end of August 2017, unless another alternative for the facility is offered by the employees and approved by GE. GE said in a news release that the planned closure has resulted from the lighting industry seeing a major technology pivot during the last decade, away from traditional lighting products including incandescent, halogen, and specialty linear fluorescent lamps. Consumer demand for traditional lighting is at an all-time low, and that shift has been supported by the U.S. government phasing out incandescent bulbs. As a result, the Mattoon Lamp Plant is operating at 60% below capacity, GE reported. Local officials said the plant, 1501 South 19th Street, has 144 employees. The company reported that GE Lighting now plans to focus entirely on driving innovation and growth in LED technology. GE said half of the U.S. market's consumer light bulb sockets will be LED, and more than 80% of all global lighting revenues will come from LED by 2020. The proposed Mattoon lamp plant closure is subject to an idea generation period. If requested by employees to offer alternatives to the plan. If the decision is to proceed, operations will be phased out by the end of August 2017, GE Lighting noted. Angela Griffin, president of the Coles Together Economic Development Organization, said her understanding is that it would be 60 days before local officials know for sure what the closure will that the closure will occur, and that there are opportunities for the decision to be reversed. If it is not reversed, she said the facility will remain open for a little more than a year. In the meantime, Griffin said Coles Together has been communicating with GE Corporate and with executives from GE's new energy company, Current, powered by GE, to determine if there are any traditional or non-traditional out-of-the-box type opportunities that might be developed at the Mattoon plant or in the community. GE is moving forward in innovative ways, and we have conveyed an eagerness to move forward with them, Griffin said. GE announced plans in August 2013 to add 30 jobs at its Mattoon lamp plant to staff two new lines of producing components of energy-efficient soft white light bulbs as part of a $10 million investment in this facility. However, GE later announced approximately 50 job cuts in the Mattoon lamp plant in November and about 15 in February. The company cited the decreasing demand for traditional lighting as the reasons for these cuts. Mayor Tim Gover said that the Mattoon lamp plant employed more than 1,800 workers decades ago when it still manufactured flash cubes for cameras. It's been here for nearly 70 years. A lot of people have been employed there, and it's been a major partner in the community, Gover said of the Mattoon lamp plant. I'm just thankful that GE was here all those years. I just wish it could be here longer. When production lines were being added in recent years, Lakeland College partnered with the Mattoon lamp plant to offer an industrial maintenance training certificate program for GE employees. Lakeland also has been serving recently cut GE employees through the college's workforce development courses. Lakeland President Josh Bullock said that the absence of the Mattoon lamp plant would be a tremendous loss for the community. He said the college stands ready to assist former GE employees with getting the training they need to work for other area manufacturers that are hiring. Coles Together, President Griffin said many local manufacturing facilities have been trying to hire trained and experienced employees. She said when there were layoffs several months ago at the Mattoon lamp plant, at least seven manufacturing facilities in the county were eager to hire the displaced employees. Griffin said GE provides skills training to most employees, including enrolling many in courses through Lakeland. She said that training is beneficial to other local manufacturers. GE employees will be heavily recruited by many facilities with current openings, Griffin said. Most major industrial employees in the county are strong, growing and increasing production, adding new product lines and hiring. That strength will help offset the impact of this announcement, and it should the decision not be reversed. New homes pop up near Oakwood. Construction is underway on 8 energy-efficient homes near the Oakwood Business District, which could become available later this year to moderate-income residents. The $2 million project is funded through the National Foreclosure Settlement Funds awarded in 2013 by Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan. The developer is Decatur Pilot, a nonprofit arm of the Decatur Housing Authority. Workers from Homeway Homes began installing the houses in the 1,000 block of West Macon Street last month. The city of Decatur helped plan and identify the neighborhood for the project. There are really two parts to this, Housing Authority Executive Director Jim Alpe said. One is trying to help individuals make this affordable. The other is trying to revitalize a neighborhood. The homes come in 4 large pieces, which are assembled in one day by the construction crews and then finished over the next 3 to 4 weeks, said Keith Mason, foreman of Homeway Homes. The company manufactures the homes in its Deerfield facility, typically for individual buyers who can customize designs based on their needs. They're as good as any conventional construction, Mason said. They're cheaper, so you can get a lot more for your dollar out of it. Alpe estimated the homes would be finished by October. While the Housing Authority likely will not begin marketing aggressively for several weeks, he anticipated that the construction would generate some interest. Moderate income guidelines are different based on how many people are in a family. For instance, a 4-person family making between $35,000 and $75,000 would likely qualify, Alpe said. The cost of the homes will vary based on how much money the buyer earns. The total expense, including mortgage, insurance, taxes, and utilities, should not exceed more than 30% of the buyer's income. That's just a fixed price. If somebody walked in with a wheelbarrow full of money, I could give them a fixed price, but we wouldn't do it through this program. We would just build them another one, he said. Because of the nature of the funding, it's intended to be affordable for moderate income buyers, and so there'll be a bit of sliding scale based on your income. Buyers also must have a credit score good enough to qualify for a mortgage, though different lenders may have different standards. They will receive home buyer counseling through the Community Investment Corporation of Decatur. The neighborhood was chosen in part because of its proximity to restaurants, Millikan, and Millikan University. Millikan University, Decatur Indoor Sports Center, and Baby Talk. It lies within the boundaries for Dennis Lab School and MacArthur High School. Despite those amenities, there were multiple vacant properties, Alpe said. The construction of the new homes could have a positive effect on the area. While the homes vary slightly, all are designed with 3 bedrooms, 2 or 2.5 baths, and high efficiency standards to keep costs low. For more information, call the Housing Authority at 217-423-7711. That's 423-7711. Millikan's School of Theater and Dance takes program to center stage. Millikan University's nationally recognized theater and dance program is attracting more and more students. Laura Ledford, the last person to chair the department before she was promoted to Dean of the College of Fine Arts 5 years ago, and artist-in-residence Sean Morrissey was named interim chair, said the number of majors has risen then from about 170 to more than 200. As a result, Millikan has changed the department to a School of Theater and Dance, effective this month, to spread management functions across more faculty members and named Associate Professor Mary Black, who has been at the university since 2009 as the new director. I am excited and proud to lead an exceptional faculty and staff into the future, Black said, and I hope to see the school grow strategically. Diversity, both our population and our curriculum, and build upon the excellence in theater and dance education for which we have become known. From Cedar Falls, Iowa, Black designed scenery and lighting, with her credits including the Station Theater in Urbana and the Decatur Park District Best of Summer Stock program. Black will have help running the School of Theater and Dance from faculty members who will serve as coordinators in the areas of performance, design and production, curriculum and outreach, and recruiting. Morrissey, for example, will coordinate outreach and recruiting, Ledford said. Sean did a fantastic job as interim chair, but the responsibilities had grown too unwieldy, she said. The school model will allow us to bring more focus to the depth and complexity of our work in these areas by recruiting more students and enhancing the production values of the performance season. Millikan Theater and Dance produces numerous performances in venues on and off campus, including musicals, plays, operas, children's theater and dance concerts, as well as productions through its student-run theater company, Pipe Dreams Studio Theater. Ledford added that the organizational structure is patterned after other schools at Millikan, such as the schools of music, nursing, and education. New staff and faculty coming from the School of Theater and Dance include Kevin Hoffman of Cooperstown, New York, assistant professor with expertise in acting, Allison Moody of Stillwell, Kansas, visiting assistant professor with expertise in voice, Eric Mercer, technical director, and Mark Black, master electrician and master carpenter. Food Innovation Challenge. Ready-to-bake cookies rise to the top. Decatur. Food entrepreneurs can use help changing a small operation over to mass production. Meanwhile, Archer Daniels Midland Company and its new partner, National Food Work Services, can use new customers. The first ever Food Innovation Challenge brought the two groups back together this week, first on Tuesday, with 10 semi-finalist businesses from around the Midwest making their pitches to the judges, and finally on Thursday, with 3 finalists giving it one last shot leading up to an awards banquet at the Decatur Club, attended by 200 people. The winning idea, netting $50,000 in seed money from ADM and $50,000 in services from National Food Works, was pre-cut cookie dough produced by Susie's Doozies, LLC of Union, Missouri and Chicago. Dean Estrelo, Technical Director of Customer Innovation and Strategy for ADM, said the judges were especially impressed by the company's patent-pending technology that keeps the refrigerated cookies from sticking together. They have the potential to be a disruptor to two major competitors who own that category, namely Nestle and General Mills, Strelo said. They are also in 650 stores since launching 1 year ago. Owners Olivia Kelvin and Robert Stanton had special thanks for their mentors, whose input already led them to switch 3 of their flavors with a positive impact on sales. Oatmeal raisin became oatmeal blueberry, sugar cookies became sugar cinnamon snickerdoodles, and double chocolate became chocolate chip candy melt. They came up with a lot different flavor ideas and have greatly helped us, Kelvin said. Mentors have partnered with semi-finalists in June to help them fine-tune everything from product formulations and ingredients to target markets and business plans. Mentors for Susie's Doozies were John Simon, Senior Director, Food Applications, ADM's Wild Flavors and Specialty Ingredients Business Unit, and John Willihan, Managing Director, Good Food Business Accelerator. Runners-up for the competition, who will also receive prizes and services, were second place Vidalia Onion Relish by Kathy's Kitchen of Virginia, Illinois, owned by Kathy and Daryl Kaler. Mentors were Randy Bird, Regional Sales Manager for Matsutani Ingredients, and Myung Kim of Decatur's Score Chapter. Third place, Gluten-Free Cupcakes by Sweet Freedom Gluten-Free Bakery of New Hampton, Iowa, owned by Chantel and Al Papasek. Mentors were Mark Florkey, Bakery Applications Research Chef at ADM, and Doug Brower, Vice President of Economic Development at Richland Community College. Hope Danielson, Director of Health and Wellness for County Market Neiman Foods, said she was excited to be one of the judges. "I was blown away by all these ideas here," she said. "It was a very difficult decision." Other lead sponsors were Aripac, Dale's Southlake Pharmacy, Coley's Corner Drugs, Jones and Thomas, Meru Nutrisciences, Millikan University, Production Techniques Limited, and Richland Community College. Keynote speaker Daryl Travis, CEO and founder of Brand Trust and author of Little Things, Big Returns, said he was encouraged by the products he saw. "I love the graphics. I love the names. You guys are all off to a really good start," Travis said. "But there is a secret ingredient beyond the product. It's the brand. And brands are about feelings, not facts." During an introduction of the finalists at Richland on Wednesday, Mark Matlock, Senior Vice President of ADM Food Research, said that much of the innovation in the food industry is coming from entrepreneurs, like the more than 50 who entered the Food Innovation Challenge. The idea was to engage entrepreneurs directly to see where the cutting edge is going, Matlock said. "This is exactly the kind of external innovation our larger customers are looking for." On page 2, state and regional, pastors sue over gay conversion therapy ban. Springfield. A group of pastors is suing Illinois over a law that bars therapists and counselors from trying to change a minor's sexual orientation, saying in a Thursday filing that the prohibition violates free speech and religious rights. The federal lawsuit seeks to exclude clergy from the ban that took effect January 1st, arguing that homosexuality is contrary to God's purpose and a disorder that can be resisted or overcome by those who seek to be faithful to God and His Word. That's a quote. Illinois is among 5 states with bans on so-called gay conversion therapy for youth under 18, a practice critics have decried as psychologically damaging. The laws in California and New Jersey have withstood legal challenges, but an attorney for the pastor said the prohibitions in those states did not include clergy. "The law in Illinois is broader than the other laws, which were aimed at licensed counselors," said John Mauck, who added that his plaintiffs are not seeking to overturn the entire ban, but want a ruling stating it shouldn't apply to clergy. Vermont and Oregon are the other states with bans, and President Barack Obama expressed support for such laws last year. The Illinois Attorney General's Office, which will handle the lawsuit on behalf of the state, had not received the lawsuit yet and couldn't comment, spokeswoman Annie Thompson said. Illinois law applies to therapists and other licensed counselors, but the portion of the law that concerns pastors makes anyone liable for consumer fraud if they practice or advertise conversion therapy that portrays homosexuality as a mental disorder. "We want to make sure that young people in particular have access to pastoral and biblical-based counsel if they want it, and that pastors are able to provide Bible-based counseling without any fear of legal repercussions," said Stephen Stultz, a Chicago pastor who is part of the lawsuit. 4 other pastors are also involved, as well as Pastors Protecting Youth and Civil Liberties for Urban Believers. State Representative Kelly Cassidy, a Chicago Democrat who sponsored the bill, said she's met with people who have gone through conversion therapy, and they tell stories of feeling suicidal, humiliated, and alienated from their families. "This is torture. This is abuse. We can't sanction that," she said. Cassidy's bill quoted language from the American Psychiatric Association, warning in 2000 that, quote, "the potential risks of reparative therapy are great, including depression, anxiety, and self-destructive behavior. Since therapist alignment with societal prejudices against homosexuality may reinforce self-hatred already experienced by the patient," end quote. But Stultz said that the young parishioners who have sought his counsel have had positive experiences. "I think we've been able to do it in such a way that doesn't bring condemnation and doesn't bring pressure, he said. Page 3 in local news. Crime in courts. Revoked driver accused of running over pedestrian. A Decatur woman was left bleeding in the street with multiple broken bones after being run over by a driver who abandoned his vehicle and fled the scene on foot, according to police. The accident happened about 8:30 p.m. Tuesday, and police said they arrested the suspect driver, Marcellus L. Daniel, 28, just before midnight. He's being held in the Macon County Jail and faces charges of driving while revoked and leaving the scene of an injury accident, among other offenses. Sworn statement said the victim was taken to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital and then transferred to HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield. She suffered a broken pelvis, a broken leg, and multiple lacerations. She had been listed in critical condition when she arrived at St. John's. Police said Daniel had been driving the borrowed car of his girlfriend at the time of the accident. He had dropped her at a Decatur address earlier in the evening and was coming back to pick her up when the accident happened at the intersection of North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive and E. Condit Street. The sworn statement stated that Daniel had initially contacted his girlfriend within minutes of the crash and sounded out of breath, described the accident, and said he and a friend were in the car when a female had jumped in front of their vehicle. Police said he told the girlfriend he'd run away from the scene because he was worried about being caught without a driver's license. Daniel then asked his girlfriends to tell the police she was driving at the time. Police said the girlfriend wouldn't lie for him, and when interviewed later, Daniel claimed his friend was driving. Daniel maintained throughout that he was not the driver, but police said he stumbled in his version of events under questioning. One officer wrote, "As I pressed Marcellus about the keys to his girlfriend's car, he yelled, 'I left them in the ignition.' Marcellus then corrected himself and stated the keys were in the ignition when I left. Daniel is being held without bail and is due in court September 9th. Shuffs win an upset in dueling RDs contest. Tykina Cole held the results in one hand and a tidy gold trophy in the other, then began announcing the winner of Thursday's Dueling RDs contest at Crossing Health Care. "And the winner is," Cole said, then began handing the trophy to Allison Riha, but at the last second she pulled it away and handed it to Elizabeth Schuff. Riha, still wearing a clown wig she'd used to try to frighten her competition, fellow Crossing registered dietitian, Schuff fell to her knees and pretended to worship Schuff, but obviously was feeling the sting of bitter defeat. Raya and Schuff were cooking healthy meals as they highlighted Crossing's Nutritional Services Department as part of National Health Center Week, a week of activities every day highlighting a different Crossing service. "We'll finish today with behavioral services. There will be therapy horses from 1 to 2 p.m. and therapy dogs from Paw Print Ministries from 2 to 3 p.m. In the first two contests between Crossing's RDs on Thursday, Schuff prepared her cooking station well before Raya was even in the Crossing lobby, where the contest took place. Raya was going for a big entrance. "We're waiting on our celebrity dietitian, who is fashionably late. No, wait, there she is, the fabulous Allison," announced Cole, who was playing show host. Raya walked in, pointed at Schuff, and said, "You're going down." Then, instead of prepping her food station, drew an arrow on an easel notepad, pointing it toward Schuff, and wrote, "She's going down," and then drew another arrow her way and wrote, "Top RD." The four ingredients the dietitians needed were to be announced. Excuse me. Sweet potatoes, tomatoes, onion, and black bean. Cole pointed out that all the ingredients except the black beans could be found in Crossing's garden, which holds a farmer's market from 9 a.m. to noon on Tuesdays that takes all forms of payment, including Link and WIC. Raya announced that she's making sweet potato black bean burgers, while Schuff made sweet potato burrito bowls. Raya donned a clown wig and nose to try and frighten Schuff. She's scared of clowns. But Schuff wasn't flustered. Continuing to add ingredients, Raya smelled the food cooking in Chef's skillet and walked away muttering, "I'm in trouble." After the judges conferred, points were added up and Chef's dish won by a point. Judge Pam Black, who is Baby Talk's social worker, cast the deciding vote. She said Chef's burrito bowls had a fresh taste and the flavors of all the ingredients were evident, while her burger was missing lettuce. Chef had been brash during the cooking phase, but admitted she was surprised at the result. I thought for sure Allison would win. She has years of being a dietitian on me, Chef said. She has the experience, so I knew I had to bring my best. Chef's best was a dish she'd never made before. I was nervous because she was making burgers, which people like a lot, she said, but Mexican is usually a winner. That was my secret. As the two served their dishes to crossing patients and employees gathered in the lobby, Raya swore revenge in the second contest later that day and won it. A winner-take-all third round will be held at 2 p.m. today. Was held at 2 p.m. today. Kindergartners get feel for Franklin School. Jill Nichols' kindergarten classroom is likely to be a musical place this school year. Charisma sings all day, said Taja Badman, Charisma's mom, who brought her daughter to Franklin School on Thursday for a Meet the Teacher Day for kindergartners and their families. Nicole was pleased to hear that and told Charisma that they sing a lot in kindergarten and that she could be the song leader if she likes singing so much. Charisma smiled and nodded, but she was too little and too shy. She was too shy to show her new teacher her skills right then. Franklin School held a full day of appointments for families to bring their kindergartners to meet the teacher, look around the classroom and the building, and get to feel comfortable before school begins in Decatur on August 17th. It's a big transition coming to kindergarten, Nicole said. We like to meet the children. We don't get a chance to know them because they're coming in from preschool, so we don't see them. If you were teaching first grade here, you might see the kids coming in from kindergarten. Nicole and fellow kindergarten teacher Kelsey Beck gave the parents a packet that included some letter recognition practice and phonics exercises they can do at home. They showed the kids around the classroom where the library corner is and where they'll hang their coats this winter. Nicole let Charisma take her name tag and choose a seat for herself at one of the tables in the room. Next door in Beck's room, Brendan Barr and his little sister played on the rug while Beck talked to Brendan's mom and dad, Brenda Barnes and Charles Williams. Barnes said she isn't too worried about Brendan's adjustment going to school, though she plans to bring him the first day and, if necessary, sit with him for a while. His older brother Benny is going into second grade at Franklin this year. The two classrooms share a teaching assistant, Dina Bruce, whose job includes helping with that adjustment. If any of the children are crying, I console them, she said. She also puts them aside into another area at the teacher's direction if they're having trouble keeping up with and works with them on academic skills and works with small groups on reading while the teachers are working with other students elsewhere. A big part of kindergarten is social and emotional skills, Nicole said, such as learning to work together and listening to directions. The day can seem long to children who went to half-day preschool. I hear, "Is it time to go home yet?" she said, smiling. I say, "Soon, or in a little while," and we keep them busy all day. Well, we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 12, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.